Hare Krishna, this is Dhanadhar Swami. People still there?
Hi, Bo.
Okay.
Hi, Krishna.
Okay. Who's that?
Gail.
Okay. Let me explain what happened, why I'm late, and then I'll get ready. Okay, 1 second. What happened is I came from D.C. today, Washington, D.C., and 1 second, I got to do something here. Okay, what happened was I came from D.C., but I came in time for the class. But then I'm actually at the Professor Bryant's house. He's the person who the translation, excellent translation and commentary that I use. And it's at a cell phone range. So he said I can use the private phone, but somehow the private phone is broken. Not broken, it's not getting reception either. So then I had to use his. By the time I found out he had a cell phone also, I'm using his cell phone. It's already a little bit late. So we'll do something today. And those of you that waited, I'm really appreciative. And it's always such a pleasure to be with Professor Bryant. He's a scholar and a gentleman. And our friendship goes back, I don't know, nearly 30 years. Reading from the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, Chapter 3, Mystic Powers. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tere Varta Matra. Nirvasam sarupa shunyam ibisamadhi. Samadhi is when that same dhyana shines forth as the object alone, and the mind is devoid of its own reflective nature. Om jnana timirandasya jnanandana salakaya. Taksurumulatam jena, tasmai si gurave namaha. Vansha kalpa tarubhyascha, kripa shindu bhayevacha, patitanam pavanebhyo, vaishnavebhyo namo nama. Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhar, Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ramo, Hare Ramo, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, we're in a new section now. Mystic powers. Actually, we're just finishing here the Ashtanga Yoga description. Just in case anybody's not been following for the last few weeks, and it's always good to repeat, that yoga is really a stage of meditative absorption where the mind is substantially detached from the contact of the senses, and it takes a high level of purity to achieve that level of meditative absorption. And therefore, there has to be a practice to bring one to that point. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, it says, the, you know, what is it, the neophyte, work is the means, and for the accomplished, cessation work is the means. So in the Sastanga Yoga process, the first five limbs are still actively engaging the senses, or the mind still actively engaged with the senses. Of course, the junction point is pratyahara. Of course, there's niyams and niyams, the rules and regulations, which are essential to withdraw or control the mind from following its impulses. You can't be a yogi if your impulses, your material impulses are not controlled. Then there's asana. You can't be a yogi if your body is disturbed and therefore the mind is within the body. Just like when you're sick, you may have a headache. You're always thinking about your pain. You know, obviously, that's not you can't meditate. So even when you're sitting, if you're tired, you have aches, then obviously the mind will become absorbed in the body, and real yoga begins when the mind is detached from the body. Then the real internal cultivation begins, and the dynamic is set in place where the vrittis or the fluctuations of the mind that distort the instrument of the mind, so that the self's vision of itself and others is also distorted. So asana means sukha and sthira. It's steady. You're steady in your posture, and sukha, you're comfortable in your posture. And therefore, then pranayama is dealing more closely with the mind, and after pranayama, the mind becomes suitable for concentration, and at that point, one can withdraw the senses from the sense objects, because even one of the senses, which the mind dwells, and even a discriminating man can forcefully carry one away. Even one of the senses of a person who is discrimination, who's accomplished. So to really be a yogi, there has to be a withdrawal from the senses, of the mind from the senses. And then the highest sense control is achieved in the process of yoga, when the mind is no longer attached to the senses. And then we've studied different stories in the Bhagavatam or the sacred texts, which describes this control or lack of control. The great yogi Subari Muni was meditating, I believe, in the Jamuna. So he withdrawn himself, and he withdrew himself. Oh yeah, in the pranayama, when you're perfecting the pranayama. The life air becomes so internalized that one no longer has to breathe. And in the commentaries, it says that there's even documented evidence by even British scholars of, you know, people buried alive you're not required to breathe externally, or as the yogi becomes more accomplished, the pranayama is you hold the breath. I forgot what that's called, right? I think rekha. They hold the breath. They can hold the breath well. So Subari Muni was quite accomplished, but it just shows that even one of the senses, contacted the sense object, can divert even a man of a discriminating mind. And what happens is these samskaras for sex life are especially pernicious because they're carried in every species of life that we've been in. We've had this sex desire. So it's very, very difficult to control the sex desire specifically, or even if it's controlled, one has to be very careful because the samskaras or the impressions of enjoyment that seeks to be filled with the same object that caused it are very, very much deep in the consciousness. I think sex life and death, because in the previous life, we the fear of death is such a powerful samskar. There's such a strong aversion to death, even from a very early age, before we had experience in this life, because in the past life we died. And in that past life in which we died, it was such a traumatic experience that there's an impression in the consciousness, an aversion to death. And similarly, there's an attraction to sex life. They're the two most powerful samskaras. So the samskaras were there. He was withdrawn. He was at Pratyahara. And then somehow or other, his sense caught the two fish populating. And somehow or other, that activated some latent samskaras. And his senses became disturbed. And then he left his meditation. And I've got the story, had 100 children, married a princess, whatever the case. And then the other was Sita, because she had to reduce the samskar, but her samskars or samskars are attachment to Ram, her attachment to the Ishvara, to the Lord, was so powerful. And her mind was so in the process of bhakti, rather than simply just trying to mold the mind within the modes and bring the mind to goodness, mind itself basically gets shaped as the soul by the energy of the soul and the attraction of the soul for God. And the mind becomes enriched with the attachments, rag, spontaneous attraction, the samskaras, the impressions, the pleasure that one gets from serving Krishna becomes so enriched and increased. It's so powerful. So Sita, even though she was captured by Ravana, who wanted to enjoy her, he could not be successful because her devotional samskara. Anyway, now, then we entered into the third chapter where after describing the five external means of Astanga Yoga, where the mind is still progressively less and less degrees associated with the mind, but still there's that contact, and then one goes very, very much internalized in the last three processes. So they're described here in the third chapter. So it's a chapter on mystic powers, but yoga in its progressive path of internalization. That's what spiritual life means, at least in terms of the mind. It's a progressive path of internalization. You're looking within, and the consciousness is not directed externally. So this dharana is the sixth stage of Astanga Yoga, and it was described as desha bandha. The mind is fixed on one place. Sometimes it's fixed on a particular part of the body, and then you can also fix it on Vishnu, and there's And then when you fix it on Vishnu, as the commentators say, it's a particularly powerful type of meditation because the mind is spontaneously fixed. Because it's concentrating on something which it is attracted to. And therefore, one naturally has no desire to think else because nothing else is attractive. And that's why the devotional meditations are particularly effective, because there's attraction to the object of meditation. Love the term that Professor Bryant uses in the book. It's not just a meditational prop. And the reasons why bhakti meditation is very powerful, which means chanting mantras, because the object itself has shakti or potency, and therefore can intervene, act on the subjugation of the mind. Srindatas, Akita, Krishna, Punya Shravana, Kirtana, Hidyantisto, Yabhadini, Vidinotisit. There's relationships, so it's a tam. It's the benefactor, it's the well-wisher, and therefore when one gives devotional meditation, even the yogis would chant om, they would chant it in a sense of relationship. They chant it with a sense of heart. And relationship means reciprocation. So the object actually is attractive, and the object reciprocates. Then finally, there's dhyana. Eka kanata, in one place without interruption. So the distinction between these higher stages of meditation, dharana, dhyana, and samadhi, sometimes even commentators give, it's just higher and higher levels of concentration. They even give the number of minutes that the mind has to be steady on one object to be considered dharana, and then there's more for dhyana, and then when one hour, 28 minutes without any single distraction. Try to just focus your mind for a minute without doing that. But so it's a description of infancy to maturity, or intimate to unbroken, or to a trickle, to oil flowing, and it's an absorption, described just like an arrow maker. He doesn't see anything else. He's so fixed. He's so absorbed. So one becomes so absorbed. So now it's described here. Let me just see if there's something I want. Yeah, I read something here. Saguna. So this dhyana is ekatanata, fixed on one point. And you know this from the previous chapter, you're meditating on something, and the meditation just goes deeper and deeper from the object. You know, it's like you're meditating on ice, but you're meditating on the subtle elements. Like, there's subtle elements that make the water. It's H2O. So there's always more and more subtle manifestations, and as the meditation becomes deeper and deeper and deeper, the object is printed in one's consciousness, one's not thinking of anything else, and then eventually you're meditating on the subtle elements behind, and there's degrees of that. So that's, and then here finally, Hare Krishna, I'm back. Okay, anybody say hello? I'll know.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Okay, I'm real sorry. It's just really difficult because I'm traveling, and I never know where I'll have cell phone reception and where, you know what. But I don't even know where I left off. Does anybody remember?
So the last thing I remember you were saying how we can, you know, they can, you can measure a person's level of focus, you know, with dharana, dhyana, and then samadhi, you know, that even like an hour and 28 minutes or something. That's a, you might have gone further.
Okay, I got it. Okay, I'll try to remember. So, anyway, they're a progressive state of, I was mentioning that before. It's infancy to maturity, intermittent, unbroken, trickle to, you know, a full flow of water. So there's an increasing process of meditation. Then we get up to today's verse. I'm very sorry. And then it's a description of samadhi, is when this same dhyan shines forth as the object alone, the mind is devoid of its own reflective nature. So the nature of the buddhi, or the consciousness, or the mind, is that when one meditates on something, and that object makes an impression in the consciousness. So in samadhi, that is the only thing that one is cognizant of. He's not even cognizant of one's own reflection. Now, this is, of course, different from... they describe even in Sagun. What is it called? Sabhikulpa Samadhi, Nirvikulpa. I forgot the terms. It's from the previous chapter, but even the descriptions of the higher absorption of Radha and Krishna in love for each other, that one is meditating on the object of love and the love itself, and there's even a sense of a lack of reflection, a lack of even identity. So this is actually common through all strains of meditation. And here in the school of yoga, Vyas states that the mind is so fully absorbed in the object of meditation that it loses all notions of itself as self-conscious, reflective mind. One has reached a stage of samadhi. In this state, the mind is no longer aware of itself as meditating on something external to itself. All distractions between the yogi as a subjective meditator, the act of meditation, the object of meditation, disappear. Kamej reintroduced the example of pure crystal, which when placed next to a red flower appears to completely lose its own character. So this, the meditation is so deep, just like the crystal loses its own character. It becomes what it is meditating on. So in that sense, there's a type of absorption where one loses sense of oneself. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, when prema is described, which is also samadhi out of devotion and love, then one, it loses cognizance of everything else. The example is Bhishma Dev, that great warrior who spoke on so many subjects. He spoke and he fought in so many battles, and he withdrew everything. And the consciousness is focused intensely. So these three, I'm going to finish this up because this class was just so difficult today because of the disruption. Hello? Yes?
Yeah.
Someone like to ask something or say something? Now, these three are a progressive stage of meditation. So when one is actually at this state of internalization, then he begins to concentrate, and the concentration thickens. It's not when he begins to meditate, he starts at the highest stage. He begins, and gradually it thickens. So therefore, in higher stages, when you reach samadhi, the whole process is called samyama. It means that these three meditational processes are formed together. And therefore, the commentators, rather than each time they describe it, list them all three together as the mind becoming quickly mature in meditation, or it's like the faucet is being turned on. You turn on the faucet, initially it starts at one level of force, and as you turn the knob, the force increases. So it's like that. Ayanamananda raises the obvious question, why are dharana and dhyan relevant all at this point, since they're already superseded by the time one attains samadhi? So once you teach the higher level of meditation, then what's the relevance of the others? As you try, is that all three types of contemplation are required in order to know an object thoroughly in all its aspects. Another explanation will be that one would assume that the yogi cannot just snap instantly at the state of samadhi. The mind first has to be gradually eased away from external awareness and progressively stilled through the stages of dharana and dhyan. Thus, the yogi sits down to meditate, applying dharana in the transition period from conventional awareness to the concentrated state, progressively focusing the mind and samadhi is attained. Verse 5, from samyana comes insight, and that was described in the first chapter, that as one's meditation becomes more and more focused, then naturally what happens is the vrittis, or the transformations of the mind based on material ego, transformations of the mind start to become subjugated or subdued, which basically those fluctuations of the mind, the coverings of passion and ignorance, is what's distorting one's discriminatory vision. It's distorting one's discriminatory discernment. And therefore, as the mind gradually, by this intense focus, again, it's a strategy. You're focusing on one thing, but it means that you're not cognizant of all the others. If there's thousands and thousands of fluctuations of the mind, the yogi reduces the thoughts to one, subdues the other fluctuations, and as that concentration deepens more and more and the mind comes to sattva, its natural state of being, then the instinct of the mind develops pure perception. And in that pure perception, one can clearly see the difference between the soul and the body, the soul and the mind. So if you can actually meditate now, do you have that type of discriminatory discernment? What is your perception? Are you actually seeing the body and the mind as different than the soul? So there comes a time by this type of focus or concentration that your perception increases. And psychological health or spiritual realization means to purify one's perception. When you see things clearly, you see God and you see your relationship with God. When you see things clearly, you see yourself as different from the temporary body and mind. So naturally, by this process, this is already described in the previous chapter, extremely deep insight develops. And that insight is also progressive. Even when we come in the mode of goodness, our insight increases, our perception increases. Just a simple fact of waking up in the morning and taking advantage of the goodness of the morning hours, which positively impacts our mind to goodness, our perception increases. We can see things more clearly. But when you actually see things with a high level of discernment, you can clearly see that the mind is not the self, that the body is not the self. So this is happening to the yogi. And then it says, jnana tasya bhumish vinayoga, samyana is applied on the different stages of samadhi. So it means that each plane must be go consecutively. It says one cannot skip a step with one's eye on a higher stage and expect to attain the insight mentioned in the previous sutra. An example, very good. No one who sets off through the river Ganga from Savada approaches there without crossing over Meghavan. See, you know, if you want to go to America and you're in India, you have to go through Delhi, you have to go through Bombay. An archer can pierce more subtle targets only when he's mastered larger ones, said Vigyan Bhikshu. And one can climb stairs only step by step. In short, yogic insight is attained in different stages. The only exception to this progression recognized by the commentators is for one who has attained the higher stages by the grace of God, Ishvara. For such a person, the accomplishments on the lower stage are automatically achieved. Otherwise, it is only by the practice of the yoga itself that one knows the next, what the next stage is. Or inversely, sometimes by trying to fix one's mind on a higher stage, one realizes that one is actually qualified only for a lower stage, since it began Bhikshu. These three, the Dharana, Dhyana, and Samadhi, are internal limbs compared to the previous limbs of yoga. So, you can't attain the higher stages without practicing Yam and Niyam. And nonetheless, the Yam and Niyam, the moral restraints, the moral observances, and even the asanas are only indirectly connected to meditation. The goal, meditation. And then they discuss rare exceptions, which are interesting, that you could have attained in your previous. And therefore, we see someone without practice achieve incredibly high levels of meditation. Without practice, one achieves incredibly high levels of meditation. And the other example is, a nice example is Shishupal. When there's emotional attachment to the object of meditation, the example is Shishupal, even out of enmity, then one can attain that. Anyway, real point is that real yoga is absorption on an object. That's what real yoga is. It's the absorption. Anyway, I'm sorry. Today's class was a little bit disturbed. It's just the atmosphere and the uncertainty of the phone was a little bit difficult today. Are there any questions?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Gail.
Thank you. Thank you for enduring me. It's very difficult because you have to be. It's a deep subject matter, and you know, I have my notes and everything here. You really need. It's so nice when I'm at a place like I'm upstate New York or at my desk in Vrindavan, and my books and notes are there, and I know that the phone connection will be proper. And because it's the same thing, it's just like this yoga. It's an absorption, actually, when you speak. But it has to go through different stages, and if the lower stages are not there, you're not going to achieve the higher stages. So I see myself when I give these classes, because I can't see the audience. There's a certain level of absorption that happens, but it's something that's built up gradually. Generally, during the class, you get a level of absorption, and that level of absorption allows you to access the information that you have on the subject. So it's a good example. If you just can't jump into that level of absorption, it's something you have to work out. You gradually work into it. Hopefully, it doesn't take me long to get into it to the class. That's why I like to give the summaries first,
of what I spoke of, because it not only gives the context of the subject, it heightens my level of focus and absorption because it's a familiar subject, and then I launch into the new subject matter to be covered. So, it's a little difficult sometimes when there's so much disruption and running around from phones. Plus, it was Ram Chandra's appearance day today, so I drove from Washington and then I took a dinner, because we fasted all day, took a dinner with Advaita right before the program. But I can definitely see the parallels, how why they just don't say, oh, you know, now there is samadhi, just go into samadhi. But it's something that kind of gradually, or you can do it quickly, but winds up. You begin to meditate. It's kind of like, you know, you're focusing something in a camera. It doesn't begin with perfect focus. It takes a little time before the focus is, you know, very, very clear. So it's the same thing with the mind. Even if you're detached, the mind is detached from the senses. When there's this meditation, it goes in like particular stages, and then one gets to the stage of samadhi where the focus becomes so deep there's no cognizance of anything else in the consciousness. Hey, Gail, what's the question?
Hello? Yes, hi, Lou.
Yeah, I'm listening.
Okay. I'm really glad that you do the summaries. I find them very helpful.
Yeah.
So, I really like the summaries. But my question is, I was meditating on the correlation between the threefold progress with, tapasya and svadhyaya. How do you say that word, svadhyaya?
Svadhyaya.
Svadhyaya?
Between Kriya Yoga, the tapasya, swadhyaya, and ishvara pranidhan, the connection.
And astanga yoga. And it seemed as though the first five limbs of astanga yoga correspond to the tapasya, right?
They certainly are tapasya, because tapasya means that you focus your mind despite the irrational impulses of the senses, the mind and senses, that you remain focused. But I'm not sure that they're describing exactly the same thing. But I think the idea is that meditative absorption is a high stage. I think Patanjali's saying, well, these are two ways in which you can purify your mind and get to that. Here's Kriya Yoga, here's Astanga Yoga. And obviously there's austerity involved in Astanga Yoga. But also Kriya Yoga is dealing almost more with the world, because what is it? It's simplicity, it's basic purification, it's study, it's dedicating your life to God. So it's a more maybe one is even more for the world, and the Astanga Yoga is more for the yogis.
So the Kriya Yoga would be more for the people in general.
Yeah, because the simplicity, it's just living simply. Svadhyaya is study, and you're studying and you're chanting mantras and Ishvara Pranidhan as you're dedicating everything to God. And the Astanga Yoga seems to be a process that really requires a deep seclusion.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much dealing with the mind. It's a direct confrontation with the mind, and it's trying to negate the material mind.
Mm-hmm. So then how is this section so relevant for us?
I'm not saying this is not.
Oh, we don't have connection. Well, I don't know if you can hear me, but we don't have connection.
Hello?
Okay,
anybody else? I didn't hear you. Let me explain the relevance. The relevance is this is the science of how the mind develops. This is a science of how the mind transforms. So whatever your practice is, it deals with transformation of the mind. So these are some of the basic principles. So obviously it has relevance. And yam, niyam, asana, you know, it's yam and niyam are absolutely essential to any aspiring spiritualist. And asana is also, you know, even the basis of dhamma meditation. Sometimes you can use pranayama, so there's some correlation. Okay. Gail, thank you. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj, please accept our obligation too.
Hare Krishna, Anya, thank you. Good. Wonderful. Anybody else? Sometimes people tell me they can't mute their phone for some reason. They want to say hello. Anyway, tonight was not a disaster, but I guess it was a salvaged wreckage. So thank you all for coming on. And tomorrow, next week, I should definitely be in a solid place with solid reception to give the class. A little difficult today, so excuse me. Thank you. Panchakalpa Devya Chakravasindhi Devya Chakravasindhi.